and welcome to Worlds Apart. The inauguration of Donald Trump has ushered in a couple of new phrases into the geopolitical vernacular. In addition to familiar references to great deals, his officials increasingly talk about diffusion of ideas and human flourishing. What could it mean for the rest of us as Team Trump is making its trumpeting re-entry onto the global stage? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Çağrı Erhan, Rector of Altınbaş University in Turkey. Professor Erhan, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Now, the Trump administration has come in with a big bang, more than 50 executive orders signed in less than a week, most of them with a marker. What's your impression of this new team so far?
In fact, we should be aware that it's not new. It's the second term of Trump administration.
But the people around him are quite different this time.
Yes, he changed, but I think he has some experience from his previous post in the White House as well. And he has some jobs that were stopped by the Biden administration. So there will be a continuation of the previous term. But there are some very new ideas. And these ideas not is only about the domestic politics of United States, but also about economy, but also about global economy, global international system. So now we are at the beginning of a new era, as far as I understand, and Trump is started to transform the system, both in the United States and the world as well.
Trump's style seems to be very showy on the surface, but so far he's had most of his cabinet nominees approved by the Congress. He's also managed to reach some tentative international deals with Mexico, with Panama. So far it seems that he's doing well. What do you think are going to be the main challenges of his administration?
First of all, we should bear in mind that the United States system, the executive power is balanced by Congress. Therefore, we don't know whether the Congress, both the Senate and the House of Representatives, would approve Trump's policies.
Well, at least for the time being, for the next 2 years, we know that he has a small majority.
The U.S. system is quite different than the continental European system. So whether the majority, both chambers of the Congress is Republican, it doesn't necessarily mean that all Republicans will approve his policies. So this is the number one question. The other one, the United States is not alone in Western world. U.S. has allies both in NATO, in Europe, and other places of the world. Therefore, from the first moments of his presidency, we see there are some reactions, some criticism from its allies, both in Europe and the Middle East and Asia. Therefore, we do not see an action that can result as the planned conclusion. There may be some obstacles on the road.
You wrote that one of the main focuses for Trump and the tech aristocracy around him will be trying to gather all the artificial intelligence technology in the world and center it within the United States to create a sort of a new form of global feudalism in its digital interpretation. Do you think that's possible? Is that a realistic project at this point of time?
We are not only at the threshold of a new era in international relations, but also in humanity. Because if you look back to the, let's say, 3,000 years, the humanity developed in all aspects, from economy to military to health, etc. But none of these developments were in such an impetus that we have witnessed within the last 10 years. And each and every moment, we have new technological improvements, new inventions, which will lead everything and will change everything and will transform everything. What I made, it was an analogy that I compared the Mid Ages Western European system of feudalism, what is going on now. In the Western European system of feudalism, there was an emperor. And with the emperor and the kings and the lords and the serfs, there was an unwritten convention or compromise that they had them some responsibilities to each other.
There was a hierarchy, essentially.
There was a hierarchy, and there was an unwritten commitment to each other. Let's say whenever the emperor asked for, soldiers, kings were sending them. And whenever there was a legacy problem between the kings, then emperor would solve the problem.
Absolutely. And that's what I like about your idea of sort of new rendition of a global feudalism is that essentially you are arguing that the West or the United States will try to reimpose this system once again onto the world in the digital form. Now, the question that I had is whether, first of all, I find it's rather paradoxical that it's the United States that would be trying to do those things, because this country was born out of the idea to break out of the imperial and, European kingship feudalism mentality. But now they are sort of spearheading that transformation yet again. But the biggest question that I have in my mind is whether this is a new form of globalization, essentially in the digital form, because the Americans, A, want to keep the control over the entire system, and B, they want still to rake in all the profits for themselves.
Okay, throughout the history, the dominant powers, let's say, since the 16th century, Western European powers like Spain, Portugal, the Dutch Republic, then French, British Empire, and United States, they had some tools to control the global system, like a very big army, strong army, and controlling the economy, controlling the trade routes, and using their language as lingua franca, and exporting their law to other states. Now, there's an addition to this in instruments, is technology. Whoever owns the technology, whoever develops the technology and controls the technology, controls the world system.
You're talking about artificial intelligence.
It's not artificial intelligence only. It is technology as a whole. Artificial intelligence is the most important component of it. And of course, nowadays we are speaking about learning artificial intelligence mechanisms.
Now, I agree with you that for the last 500 years, that's what European powers did, both with imposing their customs, their laws, their values, their technology onto the other countries. But one would argue that the world has changed, and there are many other nations who are developing not only their version of artificial intelligence and sort of testing it on in their own languages, in their own cultural values, but they also have a new sense of their own identity. Given this new level of technological proficiency of others and their awoken sense of, national pride, national identity, do you think they would want to be brought under this, new feudal rule?
The key word, both in the previous feudal rule and the newly emerging one, is the content. I mean, nothing can be done forcibly forever. Even if you have the strongest army, as you mentioned, the people, the nations can resist against your impositions. However, we see many of the nations seeing that a leader in the system who puts the rules and who runs the rules can give you some benefits as well. Therefore, we have seeing an emergence of content here. Nations voluntarily say, yes, we see you as the leader of this new system.
Some nations, right?
Not all of them, of course. They say, we voluntarily see you as the leader, as the big brother of this new system. We will benefit from it, and you will benefit from it. So that's why I made an analogy with the feudalism. It is not written anywhere. It is not written in the Charter of the United Nations. Charter says all nations, small or big, are equal. But now there are someone more equal than the others.
Well, I think that's arguable, but I want to ask you this. Trump's decree on removing obstacles to the U.S. leadership in the field of artificial intelligence, I think it's very interestingly worded, because on the one hand, it uses leadership and dominance as total synonyms. They're used interchangeably. And then it also states that the goal of this primacy that the Americans are vying to preserve is to promote human flourishing. This is the phrase that I hear people around Trump use a lot, human flourishing. How do you understand it? What do you think they mean when they keep appealing to it?
First, we have to see that it is not Trump's original invention to take some moves about the artificial intelligence. It was Biden. Biden's administration, in its final days, Biden signed a decree and passed a bill about artificial intelligence. It would almost exclusively give all the rights of artificial intelligence to United States and those countries which United States allow. Trump is now taking it further and says, okay, if you are with me to develop artificial intelligence, I can share it with you as much as I want to share. But if you go and enter into some kind of partnership with other countries, such as China, so you are against me. Therefore, this is a Trump-type international relations understanding. Because previously we saw the same thing. You are either with me or against me.
Absolutely, but it's to some extent only in language. It's a wishful thinking that the Americans want to have dominance. They want to have dominance, that's what they say. We want to control, but the question is whether the other nations are truly getting the benefits rather than being sold the rhetoric about the benefits. You see the distinction here. In your estimation of the Trump administration so far, do you think they will deliver the goodies that they promise?
I don't know. It's up to the countries, because many of the countries who enter into a compromise with the United States.
Well, it's a compromise to sell their national soul, essentially, is it not?
I don't think so. It depends on the system of or the regime of this country. I mean, in some countries, nobody cares about the people. So the only thing, the sole thing of the government is to keep their seats. So if they guarantee a protection from United States, then they can give whatever United States wants. And it is also valid for other countries. So this kind of relationship is not only between the United States and these some countries, but also between some other countries. Some say, okay, do you want to sit on your seat in this African country? Okay, give me this mining, let's say, license, and I will protect you. So this is a rule. I mean, it is not maybe legal. It is not maybe within the international law.
Convenient.
It is a practice of international relations.
Well, Professor Han, it's a practice of this program to take a short break in the middle. But we will be back in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
Think about Russia. What does your mind picture? What landscapes open up before your eyes? What wonders can you imagine? Peter Scott starts the journey. Are you ready to come along?
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Çağrı Erhan, rector of Altınbaş University in Turkey. Before the break, we started talking about artificial intelligence, and much has been said about it potentially and radically changing all areas of human activity, from employment to social relations, some even say personal human relations. And yet, if you look at Trump, he's somewhat paradoxical, because he's also somebody who is in favor of safeguarding some traditional human values, like, traditional views of the gender, traditional views of the marriage, certain limitations on abortions, etc. And he's also said to be a believer in God and providence as something that allowed him to survive two assassination attempts. Now, based on your intuition, because there is no way of knowing that for sure, but based on your intuition, may he be somebody, or, you know, may his administration be an actor that will preserve certain human values and prevent them from either corruption by the new progressivist ethics or by artificial intelligence, for that matter?
I hope so, because it's not a problem of American society only. It's a problem of all humanity. And it's not only depending on what Mr. Trump will do, but also for other rulers and other legislations of all countries. The artificial intelligence is like a knife. You can cut the bread, you can cut the meat, but you can also kill people. And philosophically, there's an ongoing discussion among the political scientists, sociologists, everyone, whether technology and values can be run separately. I mean, can we, let's say, for 100 years, we have such a debate in my country, in Turkey. Can we only take the technology of West and keep our values? It's also valid for Japan. Can we import technology only and keep our values? In fact, it's very difficult because this both affects each other. So at the very beginning, United States and all other countries should make regulations to protect human values, human dignity from the evils of technology.
Well, this is such an important and also very difficult question because there are many conventions on human rights, but we know that they have been used as a vehicle to promote quote-unquote Western values. But since you mentioned the issue of philosophy, I think it's not only for philosophy, but also for many religious systems, there is a premise that at the core of humanity is something sacred, something that cannot be sold or bought. Do you think Trump believes in such a notion that there is something that is off limits that cannot be, made a part of a big deal?
When we are talking about beliefs, it is something between us and God. Therefore, I don't know. I don't see any implications that he has doing something because of his beliefs. But he said something politically. He won the elections, came to power, and he has some promises, commitments to American people about American values, American family system, and all other things. But what I am talking is not only about the American people, all the people living in the world. Now we are entering a new age. And in this age, machine is learning. And if the machines, start to think and change something without an order from the humans, what will happen? So from the beginning, and it is not science fiction.
Absolutely.
Whatever written or shot in science fiction is become a real reality nowadays.
But at the end of the day, it boils down to a problem of a tool versus an agent and whether you are giving some of your consciousness, conscious decisions, soul decisions over to the machine. And it's a question, I think, for the governments to make. It's a personal question.
So now we have to take this as an imminent problem on the table. We should make first national, then international regulations, and take any action to prevent future of our generations from the evils of unknown, because we don't know up to where it will go. Just 1 year ago, I just, downloaded an artificial intelligence application. Within three months, the speed and the capacity 100 times growth. And within 1 year, now it is 400 times faster.
Yeah, absolutely. But Professor Erhan, some people make it sound very complicated, but at the end of the day, it's still on your phone. And how you relate to your children, how you relate to your, you know, parents, your neighbors, it's still a personal question. And it's done without any device. It's done inside you.
It is not only personal. I mean, at personal level, we should be conscious and be very careful about using this technology. But in national level, it is government's responsibility. Now, if you have such a technology, and if we see the unknown feature, then we have to take some measures, both in legal, in national level, and in international level. That's now, what I am talking about.
Now, I still have one question about the Trump administration. I wanted to ask you about Elon Musk, whom you described as embodying the pragmatism of Cardinal Richelieu and the technology-supported impressiveness of Grigory Rasputin.
Isn't it?
Well, as a Russian, I'm very much impressed with the second part of the comparison because I'm keenly aware that it was the presence of Rasputin at the
And he
Russian...
was very influential.
Absolutely.
I mean, he was a very charismatic person.
Charismatic, a mystical person, a believer in God.
And we don't know. We only know a little about how he influenced the Tsar and the Tsar.
Well, I think in Russia there have been extensive research on that subject. But one thing we know for sure is that it was his presence at the court that led to the downfall of the Tsarist family and ultimately the Imperial Russia as a state. Do you think the presence of Elon Musk at Donald Trump's court could have a similar impact either on Donald Trump or on America as a whole?
He's a very clever guy. But some of his targets or aspirations are very, you know, problematic for the rest of the world. For instance, he was speaking in an interview, I think 10 years ago, and he was asked, oh, you are talking about sending some space rockets to Mars and create a colony there. It will take years and years, maybe decades, to create a colony. And he answered, why don't you think that at the same time I can send 400, 1,000 rockets to the Mars? So he has such an aspiration. So, but all this money, where it will come from? Because it is an investment. Yes, we can think about very fancy, you know, projects, but you need the financial resources, adequate resources to reach this aspiration.
Well, he's been so far very successful in funding his own enterprises.
I don't know whether it will last in this way. What will the American society think about it? Is it their priority to lower the inflation and increase the employment or sending some rockets to Mars and create a colony there?
Now, in the last couple of minutes that I have, I want to ask you about international politics. And you have written before that Trump may attempt to, quote unquote, buy Vladimir Putin's support in applying some pressure against China. Do you think Russia's position on this issue is for sale?
No, I'm not talking about selling or buying. I didn't write such a thing. I am thinking that Russia is a Western country from the beginning. It's a European country. It's a part of European family. So I believe...
It's not Trump, very appreciated in that European family, to be honest with you.
No, I'm talking about as a Turk. I'm seeing Russia as a part of Europe. It's clear.
Well, Turkey is also proud of being, you know, both in Europe and in Asia.
It's not a subject of being proud of now. It's the reality. Trump, previously and now, is talking that China is United States' number one rival and maybe enemy. So, if you are seeing China as an enemy, do you want, I mean, Trump, does he want more allies around China? Or do you want to take allies of China one by one to side of United States? I am talking about this.
I understand that logic, but I mean, it's not only about what Donald Trump wants. It's also about, I hope, Russia's own vision of itself.
Of course.
Russia sees itself as a great nation, and that includes, you know, respect of your own interests, but also respect of your own allies and, you know, respecting the war, the obligations.
Of course, but it's at the end. It is a great chessboard, the world. Russia and United States are big powers. So at the end, when Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin will meet, they will not only speak about the situation in Ukraine. They will speak about the other parts of the world as well. And as far as I understand from Trump's policy, Trump wants to pull Russia from side of China to his side. And of course, he has to give something to do this. And Russia should also make an analysis of its own national interest. In final analysis, all countries is moving their international relations depending on their national interests.
Absolutely. And I think Putin said that on many occasions, that he wants to have a friendly relationship with the United States as well as, many other European neighbors. But Russia will not accept any sovereign, geopolitical sovereign over it. You know, speaking about what we talked, your earlier theme of feudalism, do you think it would be acceptable to the Trump administration to have Russia as an equal partner, but not as one of the, you know, subservient younger brothers?
It depends what will Trump take and what will Russia take. So it is all international relations history is a history of bargaining, negotiation. Something is given, something is taken. So this very day is the 80th anniversary of Yalta Conference. The anti-fascist alliance, they gathered in Yalta and they won the Second World War against Nazi Germany and Japan. That time, United States, Soviet Union and Britain were allies against Germany. So if you look at the minutes of conference in Yalta and the results, it was not only about the war against Germany. It was about reshaping the world. They established the United Nations. They called for San Francisco Conference. And then they established a new world system. Therefore, I believe if Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin come together and meet and start to speak, it will not be only bilateral relations of Russia and United States, but it will be a much more large scale of deliberation discussions about the future of the world.
Can I ask you one last question? You mentioned bargaining, and I enjoy bargaining at Turkish bazaars very much. And everybody who's done it knows that the asking price and the sort of the final deal price may be very, very different. Do you think Trump has the capacity of sustaining the bargaining process, not only aggressively pushing for his price, but also playing along, playing the whole game when you argue indefinitely and only at the end of it come up with some, you know, mutually agreeable solution? Does he have that skill?
Okay, unlike a first-timer tourist in Istanbul Grand Bazaar, Putin and Trump knows each other very well. So it's not the starting price anywhere. So if they come and negotiate, they know their bilateral capacities, their powers, what they mean exactly. So it's not like the tourist in Grand Bazaar giving a lot of money to a cheaper carpet.
Well, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.